All I wrote down in my notes is, I think I'm going to ask Howard to marry me.
Moving buildings. Flying. New things. The river crossing. Oh, no.
Over the sea.
Horses over the sea.
Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones game.
Sean Bean dies.
I'm Red Scott.
And I'm Ivan Hernandez.
This is Boys Going Swords.
The second part of our Great British Bake Off Holiday Special Special.
Yes, we have watched both of these episodes, and now we are bringing you a second episode, both on the Great British Bake Off, not combining in the one because we care too much about you.
And also, we got to get that content for that Patreon.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much again. It's been a wonderful year. You've done so much for us.
You've made us so much money. It has truly helped me.
No, it's been a big deal. I mean, you've made us able to do a lot more of this than truly we would have been able to.
Oh, listen, I've got a lot of impetus to do this now.
For sure. Sure. But with that, we're getting into, so this is episode 2. I was surprised that these episodes were not connected in any way.
Yeah, they were completely self-contained. And it did not make that much sense to me, but I welcome it anyway, because this is our final dalliance with Mel, Sue, and Mary.
Also, Paul.
Nah, Paul's going to go off. He's going to jump ship to the new show. Fuck him.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's the last time seeing all of them together. Mm-hmm. And listen, I feel like we're going to have to review the new show at least once, and I don't think our step broadcasters are going to be near the same quality.
It depends. They were, the rumor bin was throwing out Richard Ayoade as one of the potential new co-hosts, and I was like, that's a good choice. That's a very good choice. But who knows? We haven't gotten a confirmation on who's going to be the new Sue and Mary yet. And Mel.
Here's the thing, though. Like, chemistry is so hard to define. And so, you know, you have one of two choices. You either have to do the only thing that you could possibly do successfully, which is try and create a new vibe that's different but hopefully better. It's probably not going to be because that thing is so rare. Or you try and copy the existing sort of feel and fail miserably. So there's about a 90% chance that they're going to fail miserably.
It's very hard to replicate that, like, genuinely nice aura that Sue and Mel bring to the table.
Right.
Like, a lot of the show's tone has to do specifically with them being so incredibly nice. And one of my favorite things to learn was that they would, like, swear on camera anytime a contestant was making an ass out of themselves by crying or something, so that they couldn't use the footage. It's so fucking nice. They actually step in and do things for people, which actually turns out badly in this episode.
Oh my god, that was amazing. I really loved a lot of the characters in this.
Chetna was the only person who I recognized from previous season because I believe her season was the Netflix one that was termed the Great British Baking Show.
Yes. So that we have the mini sketch at the beginning, the holiday scene where they're giving gifts. They give Mary a magnum of champagne and they give Paul a bottle of, is it creosote?
I believe it is creosote, which I think it's some sort of tar or something. It was a jab at Paul's dumb tan.
Oh, is that what it is?
I'm pretty sure it was a jab at Paul's dumb skin color.
Oh, okay. So, what is creosote used for? It is still available as an herbal remedy and is used as an expectorant and a laxative in Japan. The major chemicals in beechwood creosote are phenol, creosols, and guaiacol. Coal tar creosote is most widely used as a wood preservative in the United States. I mean, I assumed it was an alcohol thing. I thought it was like a bathtub gin type of, but I kept Googling creosote alcohol and coming up with nothing.
No, that was definitely a jab at Paul's stupid skin that's going to give him fucking melanoma.
And again, they like perfectly captured that feeling of your parents talking in front of you and hiding information.
And the information in this case was everybody hates Paul Hollywood.
The second episode with a pun that is so awful and subtle that you might have missed it. Mel saying, I'm not putting up with this.
I keep missing so many puns because I don't have the subtitles on.
Yeah, the subtitles are especially well done on the BBC player. So one thing that I hadn't seen before is when multiple people are talking, which happens all the time on the Great British Bake Off, they'll have multiple subtitles on the screen at the same time, and they'll have different colors representing different people, which made it way easier to follow. So we have Janet, who is very centered and reminded me a lot of the sad emotion character in Pixar's Inside Out.
Oh, she truly does resemble sadness.
We have Chetna, who's wonderful and we know, and has her glorious salt and pepper hair that just
it has gotten even saltier and peppery since the last time we saw her.
I would say saltier and less pepper.
Oh, definitely saltier.
We have Howard, who I loved. Give Howard his own show. Every time he was on the screen, I was giggling. Everything he did was funny, sometimes because he intended it, sometimes because he didn't. I want him to host the next show. He's awesome.
He has such a Charles Nelson Reilly vibe to him.
He has a Charles Nelson Reilly vibe. He also, with like a touch of like, God, what's it? Is it Tim Alexander? What? Tresemme. What's that guy's name?
Tim Gunn?
Tim Gunn, yeah.
he does have some Tim Gunn to him.
Just a little bit. Just like a less confident Tim Gunn.
Oh, and then we get...
James.
James. James. Fucking James.
James. So, Janet's great. Chetna's the best. Howard makes me laugh. And we learn that, like, multiple...
And then
some
there's
of the
James.
We learn the backstory. So, Howard... I'm surprised this wasn't a bigger deal, but he was cool about it. So somebody else used his custard. They put the custard in that shared space, which is cursed. You should never do that. Bring your own mini fridge and plug that in if you're on the Great British Bake Off. And somebody just went in, grabbed his custard, and used it on their shit like a monster. Like a monster.
And then this one was truly amazing. Sue put her elbow on his biscuits.
I forgot about it. Oh, that was incredible. Like, she was just leaning on his table. And the moment where she realized it, oh, that's poetry.
Poetry. Truly beautiful. We also got a reference to the infamous Baked Alaska.
Right.
Which, responsible for one of the great gifs of all time, of that guy just dumping his entire Baked Alaska into a trash can.
Easily my favorite gif. So we have
it truly beautiful.
So we have three characters: Chetna, Baked Alaska episode. We have Howard, who had multiple bad things happen to him, and then we have James, who, despite winning 3-star bakers, ended with a Dresden of a gingerbread house. I don't know how else to describe it.
Oh, that I cannot. That looked like if he was going for like abstract art gingerbread house. I got that.
It was like your standard London British building immediately post Blitz is what it looked like.
And here we've got a great example of German engineering.
And so I have to imagine they asked them to do this in person, but each one of those people sort of goes back to their big traumatic incident and revisits it with very differing results.
Oh,
some succeed, some fail. I loved Paul's Christmas jumper. In an era when like parody of Christmas sweaters has gone full circle from like trendy to now they manufacture new ugly Christmas sweaters that are just printed on. Like, his was a classic old Christmas sweater, had like a full scene on it of like a snowball fight happening between like 5 different people. There were way too many people on it. Just really well done. It was about half a size too small, which was just the most Paul Hollywood thing ever.
I feel like they told Paul, hey, bring a nice Christmas sweater, and he brought that.
Yeah, I believe it's a Sue who says, look at this wonderfully distorted Christmas scene.
Everybody hates Paul Hollywood so much, he's such a piece of shit.
So we get the Christmas signature. They're making canapés, which I've never heard of before. Apparently it's a pastry stuffed with something.
Yeah, and it's all savory, which leads to some pretty out there choices.
And we have Mary saying, it's Christmas time, you've got to push out the boat, which I think supplied me with a very different mental image than what was intended. And I was very much imagining like labor and child, yeah, like you got to push out the boat, or like somebody just like squeezing out a ship in a bottle the other way.
That's just some British innuendo I don't quite get again.
I don't get it. I love it. Howard is like, he's like Mr. Rogers' worldly and more worldly and sensitive brother.
he truly is. When Marianne was like, crab patty with salmon, mushroom and liver tartlets, I was like, this sounds fucking amazing.
I know. I was like, I'm listening.
Yeah.
And Janet, yeah, Paul and Mary, when Janet describes her pastry, Paul and Mary basically double team her right there on the table.
They really were into those.
They were they had to like catch their breath a second.
Howard going with pea flour, which is a very outside choice.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. And like I liked his like inventive little shapes, but I mean, he ends up burning the edges, and you have to know that's going to happen when you're shaping it like that. Mm-hmm. And he took no precautions whatsoever to try and prevent it, which I found baffling. I was baffled.
Yeah, I believe at one point James says, not as good as at home, yeah. And yeah, that's the fucking rub, ain't it? The tent does not forgive.
The tent does not forgive. It doesn't forgive. It doesn't forget. All of your mistakes will come back to haunt you.
It truly is the Gom Jabbar of baking. By the way, I finished Dune. The Middle East is crazy, you guys.
So I tried to read Dune once when I was like 13, and I was like,
okay,
I'm not that great with English, and you have made up words in a language that I do not understand.
Well, first of all, a lot of those words are Arab or Yiddish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of those words are actual words. They're just not actual English words.
Well, I don't know those words.
I got an audiobook that also has like a lot of the cast played by like different actors.
Okay.
And let me tell you, it's 20 hours, but it fucking gets you through that shit.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely recommend that. And let me tell you, there's some good shit in that fucking book. I've heard that the sequels start to slowly peter out, but let me tell you, fucking, if you're looking for like a super weird science fiction epic that's just going to throw you at every fucking turn, Dune's a good one.
Yeah, no, I'll have to get into that. I think that also, I both tried to read it and then gave up on it immediately, partially because my dad said it was one of his favorite books. Like it was one of those like, I'll check it out, and then I looked at it and then I turned to him and I was like, this is dumb. You're dumb. So now that I'm older and more mature, I'll have to read all the way through and then call him dumb in a more complex way.
truly. That's some good, that's a good way to start 2017. Call up your dad and tell him his favorite book is dumb.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, I posted this on Twitter responding to somebody else, but my favorite books I read in 2016 were Octavia Butler's Xenogenesis series, which is some amazing and fundamentally like compelling sci-fi that has some very problematic elements that are extremely interesting and handled very well by Octavia Butler, who is one of the OG science fiction writers who is also a person of color. So it's great and different on like 10 different levels. The whole trilogy is great. Also, Carter Beats the Devil, historical fiction.
Oh, I heard a lot of good thing about that one.
Great. And a lot of, especially it has a lot of Bay Area history. So if there's an extra little note of fun if you're from around here. And also, you're going to love this, Ivan. If you haven't, please read David Hallström's biography of Bill Belichick. It's fascinating. So that's
and if we're going on books that I read this year.
Uh-huh.
Motherfucker, I'm still all up on that ancillary.
Yeah, man. You are You're exactly like my sister, who has only ever read Harry Potter books. Like, all you're doing, the only books you've read are Ancillary Justice.
I love that Ancillary trilogy so much because, first of all, it's about a fucking robot who's like, emotions are stupid, but I have to experience them anyway.
Right.
And I hate it, but this is how we have to do it. So I love that aspect of it. I love how fucking propulsive the action is. I love when it slows down and becomes more character focused. I love how it doesn't conclude with a giant fuck off space battle. Because listen, sometimes life doesn't conclude with a giant fuck off space battle.
Also,
I just want Anleki to notice me, senpai.
it's the question that asks, what if Data was a multi-conscious organism that lacked gender and was also a ship?
And that's the other thing. Everybody's a she.
Everybody.
It's my ideal world.
So we got the boat getting pushed out. We got Howard. We've got Cilantro being called Coriander. James' blind confidence, I find very off-putting. I hope he fails. I wrote that early on.
And he truly does.
And he has... I also felt like he was leaning into the show's bodiness a little bit with his giant phallic ginger he brought. He's like, you could just see him just like very practiced. He's like, don't laugh. I'm only using half an inch. I've got 8 inches left. They're just apoplectic. Paul's just reduced to giggles. He can't even respond.
Howard breaking out the tweezers, which is truly a mark of pretentious foodieism.
every scene Howard was in. I'm bored of pastry. I want to get onto a filling. I've never heard someone bored in the tent before.
And then we get the first judging, Chetna's food, which anytime a white person is like, ooh, that's spicy, I'm like, you do not know what spicy is.
What? So, and then Janet's anti-anxiety meds are just dialed. They are dialed. She's like, oh, well, that's a disaster. Like, she just is not feeling anything. She hasn't felt anything since the late 70s. James is the only
one who... his stack looks solid.
Right.
But it kind of falls apart, so he gets dinged on that pastry.
Well, also, so I'm not quite to the judging yet, but James is the only one who did just one puff pastry. Everyone else is doing two. That's a fundamental mistake. Your puff pastry has to be orgasmic if you're going to be able to pull this off. And I don't like going simple in this one winter Christmas bake-off. This is the round for the Candaces of the world. I want home run hits all the time. I want a high slugging percentage. I want a low batting average. I just want people swinging for the fences.
Oh, and let me tell you. Howard fucking swung for those fences.
Yeah.
I looked at that trout and I was like, I want that fucking trout.
And
give me that fucking trout.
Chetna choking on her own spices, saying Mary's going to have a tough time with these. I was like, no, please back this off a little bit.
Oh, no, but they liked it.
It ended up working out very well. I wonder if she did do something to like sort of mellow it out a little, or if she just got lucky and they got the ones that weren't as spicy.
And fucking Howard with his partridge in a pear tree.
Yes!
God damn it.
Genius.
God damn it. He stuck to the theme, which is important.
Chetna says, the mild one, that's the mild one. And Paul eats it, almost chokes, and he's like, that's the mild one? And then the other one, they don't even mention the spice. I was looking forward to tears running down Mary's face. I wanted her pouring vodka in her mouth and then spitting it out. To try and get the spiciness out.
Into her alcohol spittoon? Did you find out the name for that yet?
No. What do they call that? I think it might be called a spit jug. How about that? Is that what it is?
Oh, that's so classy.
Yeah. I think it might be called the 2-buck jug.
Oh, that's where Trader Joe's gets it.
Yes. Janet made oversized canapes. Well, I've never seen them that enthusiastic about a pastry that's obviously overcooked.
And every time they say something is too big, I'm like, it's not big enough for me.
Yeah, I was like, God, what's with you people just focusing on daintiness? Like some people like a bit of girth.
Listen, we're Americans. We eat big pastries.
And so everybody I guess Shetna probably does the best in that round. Mm-hmm. You know, Howard's okay. James, I did like the move of asking if he could eat one along with them.
You never see that. Never see that, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah, because then also you get to validate yourself. If they're giving you negative feedback, you can be like, is that right or is that not? I trust me.
I think I did fantastic.
Yeah, that's Norman's way out.
Mm-hmm. And moving on to the next bake, we have Kenneth fucking what now? I don't know what this is supposed to be. Kennelink?
Kennelong.
It's a fucking Scandinavian Christmas loaf that's a bunch of cinnamon rolls.
Right. It translates to cinnamon length, which 4 out of 5 dentists agree is an unsatisfying length.
I like that cinnamon length, though.
James slapping and folding matches his false confidence, which I'm completely over.
Now, Howard's dough in that bowl looked beautiful. Just like a perfect fucking sphere.
And we didn't get any of this in the first Christmas episode. That proving garbage. Proofing garbage. I'm not...
Oh, you don't like the proofing drawer?
It's so stressful.
It really is. Proofing is probably the most stressful part of baking that's not actually baking.
And they hit upon one of my favorite technical challenge problems. Nobody in the rooms knows what this is supposed to look like.
Oh, that's my favorite thing. When everybody has a different idea of what the bake is supposed to be.
And I thought he put it in the oven, but I guess he was just proofing them again. But James literally sees Chetna's, pulls his back out, and reorganizes him to look generally like Chetna's.
And Chetna actually got mad. Got legit mad. Wow, Chetna, you're really taking this personally.
Well, it was so weird because she was like, you're cheating, when she was staring at his. Like, she was the first one who was just, like, looking at his, like, unblinkingly. And then the second when he took cues from her, she was like, no, that's dumb. And I was like, I don't know what's going on there. And they all finish up compared to the perfect one. They all look completely huge and wrong, is how I'll describe them.
Basically, they all kind of fucked up. Janet's just fucking splooged everywhere.
They all look like cancer-ridden Cinnabons.
they really do. It was like, oh, you got one of those malignant rolls?
Yeah. So judging, Janet got the shape right, but quite big and underdone. Howard's is well-baked. Mm-hmm. Went light on the cinnamon. Chenna did pretty well. And then James get number one after cheating, and Chetna's, like, little girl tattling self could not fucking let that go.
I love how petty Chetna is about this.
She's so petty. That is some classic mom said you're not supposed to go into the pool for 30 minutes after eating bullshit.
He's violating a rule that doesn't actually exist.
Yeah. I saw it. She is so mad. Like, even when they're doing the monologues afterwards, like, she can't help herself.
Oh, that's some good pettiness. I really appreciate that level of petty.
And this was one of those, like, I didn't understand what was happening. So Paul's like, oh, it's between Chetna, James, and Janet. And they're like, what about Howard? And he's like, yeah, what about him? Dead to me. And it was like... I was like, how did he already lose? He came in second in the technical, and like it seemed like he did kind of middle of the pack in the first round. I felt like he could really knock it out of the park and compete, which they bring up, and he's like, yeah, fine. For conversation's sake, let's say Howard might have a chance.
I think it's not as good for competition if you just say, it's anybody's game!
No, it's great for competition, because then you can root for your favorite, who at this point might have been Howard for me. So I took that real personally. And so for their showstopper, they have tiered
this is
celebratory centerpiece.
Anytime that they go, do whatever you like, I always hate it because it's like, guys, we need rules. Yeah. We need rules and guidelines.
And another very subtle pun, I can just imagine the bulge in Santa's sack. Okay, it was less subtle. God.
When Chetna was like, I'm going to do a baked Alaska, I believe I may have actually gasped.
Yeah. So we have, in the fun round, we have Chetna doing the Baked Alaska. We have James, and this felt staged to me. He forgot his tiered structure.
Oh, how do you forget your tiered structure?
So he's like, I'm going to make a tiered structure out of gingerbread, the exact material that collapsed calamitously, famously, in my earlier episode. And then Howard is going to make custard again, which, you know, somebody stole. He's never got to present his own custard. Mm-hmm. And at this point, here's the problem. I didn't write down what happened. All I wrote down in my notes is, I think I'm going to ask Howard to marry me.
And you know what? I think he'll accept.
James, and I'm just going to eat his delicious custard. James is making a massive gingerbread structure, much like the one that failed. So Janet's...
Janet sounded so fucking gross.
What do you mean?
I just didn't like them on the descriptive level.
So, and then Janet's immediately like, I've got to be precise, next second. Wait, where's my timer?
Oh, Janet, you're such a grandma. I like the sound of James's donut, but the other one sounded very iffy.
Honestly, James almost got me around by making donuts when nobody suggested that he had to make donuts, and that is a man after my own heart. Like, if you can make anything and you choose not to make donuts, haven't you already failed on some level?
Donuts over everything.
Yes. Yeah. That's going to be our new DOE t-shirts.
Donuts over everything.
Custard-filled donuts. Ah, oh, man. And of course, we get one of the worst things that can happen in the Great British Bake Off, completely starting from scratch on a item, his macaroons, which we've seen pay off.
Fucking macaroons!
We've seen payoff maybe once or twice, but almost never works out well.
Mm-hmm. And this one, I believe I gasped again when this happened. Chetna's grate fell through her cream.
That was crazy. I couldn't believe, one, that happened. Those freezers are cursed. Don't put your shit in those freezers.
Yeah.
And then number two, I was shocked how little it affected them. Like, visually.
She recovered beautifully.
Yeah, I think she might be a wizard.
She truly is a wizard of baking.
I don't understand what happened, how she made it look that good.
And this is, I think that this might be my favorite moment of the episode.
Uh-huh.
Janet not having her icing done. So Sue makes the icing with flour.
With flour!
That is... it's like you didn't even learn to tell the difference between confectioner sugar and flour. That is why she's such an amazing presenter.
Also, you think you'd be able to, like, smell it? I don't know.
That exit from the shot she makes... Oh, I want somebody to turn that into a GIF.
Yeah, that's...
I need a GIF of her exiting the scene after Janet going... It's flour.
Yeah, that needs to be my new getting out of 2016 like GIF.
It's truly beautiful.
I wrote down for the mini baked Alaskas where the rack fell down on them. These freezers are nightmare machines invented by Goebbels in the death camps.
Oh God, that's a bit much, but I don't think that you're wrong.
Yes, Sue tries to make an icing out of flour. James' gingerbread design is collapsing again, and the best part is how severely and thoroughly it collapses.
I think my favorite part of that is how it collapses initially, and I was like, oh, that's pretty bad, but I think it can still recover, and then it collapses more.
I could not stop laughing at his gingerbread pile.
Oh, it was truly hilarious how badly that went.
It looked like modern architecture. It was that bad.
It really did. It was more like Frank Lloyd Wrong.
Frank Geary? Is that the guy I'm thinking of? Fucking Franks.
There's a lot of Franks. There's a lot of Franks.
I'm going to be frank with you.
Howard?
That looks like crumpled up aluminum foil.
It really did. Howard made a fucking Twinkie for some reason.
Yeah, he's like, check it out. It's a Twinkie. But made of whole wheat.
It's like, Howard.
Howard, you made a healthy
doing so
dry.
Well.
You and you're trying to finish it up with a healthy dry Twinkie.
Ugh, no, thank you.
Yeah, that felt like he bet against himself and was taking a dive.
It truly did. I want to see what the odds in Vegas were for the GBBO.
So Janet ends up doing pretty well. Not as bad as she thought. She thought it was a calamity. But it
her, her Mont Blanc got positive marks. The cake bowl did not bomb terribly as she expected it to. And the Christmas cake had very nice colors. Decent overall.
All right. I need to bring this up. This is the worst I felt for somebody. The meanest thing Mary has ever said is when she's trying to describe his donuts and she like stops, stumbles, and then says, laughing, "I'm trying to be kind."
Oh!
That's rough.
Oh, poor fucking James.
That's brutal. Why not just whip his back with a salt-encrusted leather whip?
By the way, now I want to find out if anybody actually tortured people by doing that. That sounds like an amazing form of torture.
No, they definitely
somebody
did.
With a whip covered in salt?
I don't remember where I read that, but I didn't come up with that. That's a history invented that.
History truly is the fucking greatest tyrant of our time.
Like I do love the idea that like just a gourmet torturer who's like, "Why don't you put salt on that whip?" And he's like, "What?" And he's like, "Everything's better with salt."
Now we burn them with the caramel.
It's so hot. Why didn't anybody tell me?
Why do they keep putting their fingers in it?
I thought it was going to be a nice, refreshing caramel. This is nothing like that. They love Howard's custard. They love it. Mm-hmm. Delicious custard. His Twinkies are garbage. His cheesecake, they're like, the cheesecake
bland.
The cheesecake is a little bland. And then when they're talking about Howard when he's not there, they're like, "That cheesecake was an offense to both cheese and cake. That was one of the worst things I've ever put in my life." I don't know how you fuck it up that bad. It seemed to be what they were saying. I felt like Paul had a personal thing against Howard that I cannot explain. It was the opposite of the Pelosi bond we had between Paul and Selassie, where it seemed like he was skating through. But then Chetna gets dinged initially for not having Christmas color,
but fucking runs away with it. Baked Alaska, fucking redemption. Cheesecake, good as hell. Roulade, killed it.
Looks great. They both enjoy it. The exact line they said, if we compared every dish on this table, Chetna's three things are 1, 2, and 3.
Oof. Damn. And yeah, she just ran away with it.
Basically, motivated by James' dirty cheating, his offensive cheating, she stayed up all night, practiced 19 times, and made the perfect Christmas meal.
Yeah, and of course, Chetna wins it.
All right, so that has been our second Great British Bake Off Christmas episode. Thank you for listening, guys. Mm-hmm. We love each and every one of you Patreon supporters. You've made our lives so much better.
You have put so much money in my pocket.
Yeah, so we will... We're actually struggling. So we just finished Westworld. We did the Star Wars stuff. We've been talking about what we're going to cover next. And I think both Ivan and I are leaning towards being a more general pop culture podcast going forward. Would you say that's...
If I have to go back to reading those fucking Game of Thrones books, I'm going to fucking tear my heart out and throw it down a goddamn storm drain.
So I don't know. I want to hear what you guys are interested in us covering.
There's a lot of good TV coming out this year, and it fucking starts pretty soon, guys.
There's a Pope. He's young. I'm very interested in how crazy that is.
He's a Pope, and he likes to fuck.
You keep saying that? I've only seen the first episode where he doesn't even get close to fucking anybody. He smokes.
Listen, if you're going to make a show called The Young Pope and the Pope doesn't want to fuck, you really messed up your own premise.
I mean, he could be a real weird Pope, and let me tell you, he's a real weird Pope.
Listen, on the scale of weird Popes... There's a lot of fucking weirdness.
That's a good point. That's a long history, and I shouldn't.
Smoking is actually the least weird thing that a pope has ever done.
There's one of those great power scenes where he's like, "You can't smoke in here," and he's like, "Why not?" He's like, "The pope made it illegal." He's like, "I'm the pope. It's now legal."
It's not illegal if the pope does it.
So yeah, leave us comments on the Patreon page.
Tell us what you want us to cover. There were a few people who were asking us to do the full season of Yuri on Ice, which I would not object to.
I
mean, listen, it's a lot of anime for Red.
It's a lot of anime. But Tell us what you think. You find us on Twitter at BoysGoreSwords. You can find Ivan on Twitter at Ivan_Hernandez.
You can find Red on Twitter at Red_Scott.
Scott. Bye.
See ya.